Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, I got pretty excited when I saw this headline. I think I first saw a press release in my email inbox, and then there was a headline at NBC Montana. I think we even had a write-up at MontanaTalks.com. The University of Montana and the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation announced the Center for Hunting and Conservation. Now, the reason I got excited about it is not just because we love hunting here in Montana, and we love good conservation here in Montana. I say good conservation for a reason, not just locking people out of the land and calling it conservation, but good conservation, you know, the types of programs supported by the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, for example. But the reason I got really excited about this headline is because I was like, wow, this is great to see a university with an environmental program that actually is good for the environment, not just one of these phony environmental groups that's trying to lock us out of the land or kill our industry or be anti-hunting. You know, you get a lot of groups right now that are calling themselves hunting groups or sportsmen groups. And really what they are, they're fake, phony, green decoy groups. They were the radical environmental groups that realized how unpopular they are. And so now they call themselves a sportsman's group, when they are nothing of the sort. Anyway, it's great. But when I saw this news earlier this summer, I thought, man, we got to reach out. We got to get our friends from the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation back on the show with us. And so it's great to kick off the program this morning with Kyle Weaver, the president and CEO of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Kyle, thanks for being with us here this morning.
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Appreciate you having me back on.
Yeah. What's most exciting to you about this partnership between the University of Montana and the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation?
Well, I'd say two things. Or one was kind of what you hit there leading it off, is that it's so exciting to see the University of Montana so supportive and actually building the growth of the university around the hunting and the outdoors. You know, Seth is really focused on that. And two, that here's two nationally kind of, you know, ranked organizations. I think we're pretty high up in the conservation world. And you got the University of Montana, which is an R1 research level university, which I somewhere around 3 to 4% of universities reach that level. And here we are in Missoula, you know, 2 miles from each other, and we can take this initiative and move it forward together.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, RMEF is a national, well, internationally renowned organization, but headquartered, you know, right here in Missoula, Montana. Well, I thought, Kyle, we could take advantage of this opportunity not only to talk more about this new program at the University of Montana, but also to get into, you know, some of the big outdoor issues of the day as well. We've got Kyle Weaver with Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation joining us for the first half of the program. And then when I was at the Western Congressional Caucus Summit in the Flathead last week, I also ran into Everett Headley with Safari Club International, with SCI. He's based out of the Bitterroot, another great pro-hunting conservation organization with some strong connections here in Montana as well. So he'll join us in the second half of the show. But we're going to talk about wildfire management, grizzlies, and much more. Stand by. Back to Kyle Weaver, CEO of Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, right after this.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, so the University of Montana teaming up with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation to form the Center for Hunting and Conservation. Kyle Weaver, CEO of Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, tell us a little bit more about how you envision this program playing out and how the whole thing came about in the first place.
You know, it's interesting how it came about. You know, Seth and I arrived in Missoula about the same time. He was a little ahead of me taking over the university, and 6 or 8 months later, I took over here. And as you can imagine, we get invited to the same fundraisers and same events and kind of got to know each other. Actually, through Mark Baker, a friend of ours, Mark really introduced us. And one day, him and I were riding in a car to an event. Had a, I think, up to Kalispell, a couple hours in the car. And as Seth tells it better than I do, I was somewhat defending hunting to a president of a university, right? You know, just talking about hunting as conservation and what it is. And he finally said, "You don't have to keep selling me. I'm with you. I understand everything you're talking about." And so as that conversation kind of kept going, and I got into, you know, the research and science side and how RMEF has always been about the research, the science, and the data. I mean, we have never strayed from that, and that, you know, we funded a bunch of research. We funded projects at the U. We funded projects everywhere. But I felt like we needed to be a bigger player in that world. And that was kind of the end of it. And then over the next, say, year, Seth came back to me and said, I got an idea. You know, I really want to grow this university around the outdoors. I want people to come to the University of Montana. I want to grow our student base around this R1 university and everything it has to offer in forestry and biology and outdoors. And we already had a wild stuff in this program with them. And he had this idea. And, you know, these centers, when these universities build these centers, it's really the presidents that kind of own them. And they came in and made a presentation to us. And at the same time, I think somewhere in between all that, him and I had lunch one day, and I started talking about our research and science internal growth. And we hired our own internal PhD. And, you know, we needed to attach ourselves to academia. And he, of course, came in and said, for this much money, we can do this together. And we did. And it's a long-term partnership. We're still in the early stages of building the scope and the projects and some of the initial research science that we'll do together. But and we'll do some fundraising together and so forth to build this thing up. And, of course, I think they've made it known they're building a brand-new building for all this to go into, which will be one of the number one buildings ever built at any university in Montana. So it's really exciting. But to me, the most exciting part is you got the University of Montana and the Elks Foundation here in the same town. We can share daily on everything we do so easily, but make this impact across the nation. And as you know, in today's world of advocacy, which we're much bigger in, the research and science has to be there. When you get into the advocacy, you've got to be ahead of the game in that world. And that's really why we're jumping so deep into this.
I hope it's really a monumental pivot, not just at the University of Montana, but hopefully spreads across higher education in these university systems as well. Because what we've historically seen is, you know, I feel like we've seen the historic mission for the School of Forestry and maybe even wildlife biology. But, you know, you think about University of Montana, I think about wildlife biology, I think about forestry. There's an intersection here, too, where good forestry also equals good wildlife biology, or a.k.a. good hunting opportunities and good wildlife habitat. The ranchers get it. The ranchers manage the land. That's why they have better wildlife habitat. And it seems like our government and our higher education systems have moved away from that. So I hope that this is a pivot back to that. Because what you've historically seen is, like, you see these left-wing mega donors fund these environmental initiatives on campuses like the University of Montana, and they push an agenda that's the opposite of what's best for wildlife habitat and forestry and farming and ranching, too.
Absolutely. And that, you know, I give all credit to Seth. I mean, as a university president, to be leading the charge of exactly what you're saying and believing in it, not just him, all of his staff, they really believe in the hunting is conservation. And I remember when he first came to me, they were talking about calling the center that. And I go, Seth, you know, we own that. That's a trademark. So you can't call it that unless we're involved. And so, but that, you know, their brain was already there. They understood exactly what you're talking about, where this movement needs to go. And, you know, there's no bigger conflict for us than when something pits our members against each other. And the number one thing that does that is public versus private, public land versus private land, mm-hmm. The non-resident versus the resident hunter. And the science, and you nailed it, the Fix Our Forest Act that we're heavily lobbying in D.C. right now, we got to take care of our public lands. We got to get them better. If we want to move elk off of private lands, the first thing is they got to have food. They got to have good habitat back there. And, you know, the Elk Foundation, that's what we do. Habitat is what we built this organization on, and access and land protection. That is what we've done for so long, and we will continue to do. That never stops. But this next jump into this research and science world to really show the science. I mean, when you're trying to get politicians and different people to look at different bills, the better the science, the better chance you have of that bill or a bill of any type making its way through through the process. And you know, science today, it's not all trustworthy.
That's
sometimes
right.
You tell me what you want and I'll give you science that says that. And we just want the truth. You know, we just want lay out, here's what the science says. And we'll be very particular about what comes out of the Hunting and Conservation Center.
I was going to say that accountability is key. Yeah, that accountability is key, because it might start with the best of intentions, but then quickly get overtaken by other actors who want to use it to promote another agenda. So that accountability is going to be key. Kyle Weaver, President and CEO of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, hold that thought. We'll talk more right after this. By the way, one of the Rocky Mountain Elk folks has a piece in the Washington Post today, so maybe we'll touch on that topic as well. Stand by.
Did you know?
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Blake Henning with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has a piece in the Washington Post out this morning where he's talking about basically the need, you know, just the much-needed reform of the Endangered Species Act, as I understand it. I don't pay for the Washington Post, so I had Grok do a summary here, but also talked about grizzlies and how, look, we have far surpassed the goal here. Why do we still have these things listed as an endangered species? So it sounds like he's got a great write-up there. We'll talk about that and more here with Kyle Weaver, the CEO of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Kyle, you said something, though, before that last break that stood out to me. You basically referenced how there are so many groups out there, and I think it's deliberate. You know, we see that the division in America, and so much of it is being done deliberately so that they can divide this country and change this country into something else. And we see this especially in the outdoor space, where I think you just basically pointed it out. Public land hunter versus private land hunter, out-of-state hunter versus in-state hunter. And I think that the deliberate mismanagement of our federal lands in particular is done in part to create these divisions and to cause this divide, you know, sportsmen versus agriculture, for example. They want to divide us. And that's why I think most of the left-wing media mob doesn't want to talk to legitimate outdoor groups like you guys. Anyway, your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of anti-hunting groups out there in general, right? And most, I would say, don't understand hunting. They don't understand hunters. To steal from my good friend Chris Cox, you know, because you're an anti-hunter, you don't own the monopoly on loving animals. I love animals as much. Sometimes I think I may love them more than they do. I've spent my whole career around this. But this anti-hunting movement, the best thing you do is when you pit hunters against each other. And you know, we fight that. We try to be the voice in the middle. Can we, you know, we are a national organization, and we try to represent all the resident versus the non-resident, the bow versus the rifle, you know, the upland bird, you name it, right? We're for all of it. And not only that, you know, we do these access projects. I think one of the things that separates us, we're not doing access for hunting. We're doing access so people have access to public lands. We are all for multiple facets of access to the public lands, not just single face, and some of these other groups are.
Yeah.
So I think it's what separates us and gives us a good voice.
Well, some of these other groups, like I say, they're environmental green decoys that are pushing the environmental agenda, pretending to be sportsmen, yet they come out against access. And they do so through environmental restrictions. It's because they don't really care about the hunting. They just use that as a decoy. I've mentioned this story on the air before. I was tagging along. My father-in-law had an antelope tag, so I just tagged along for the hunt. And it was just interesting because, you know, just tagging along for the ride. And so I wasn't as focused on finding the antelope because I didn't have a tag. So I was just kicking back, listening. And it was just interesting. It was like, well, there's public land and then there's private land. And I looked at it like, no, there's managed land and then there's mismanaged or unmanaged land. And that's why so many people, you know, want the more abilities to hunt on private land, because there's better habitat there. To this topic you were just covering here, you were talking about protecting the hunting heritage. you know, other states, we look at like Colorado. I mean, Colorado, holy cow, what a sea change politically Colorado is seeing right now. Which, hey, frankly, when I was a kid, actually, I got to go on an elk hunt down in Colorado, and I could see where hunting heritage and hunting rights in places across the West are under fire right now. What's the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation doing to protect that hunting heritage across the West?
Well, you know, as the C3, the charitable arm, we lobby everywhere. We have state people on all the, you know, these ballot initiatives to get going. We fought the ballot initiative on mountain lion hunting, which was really an attack against hunting around the mask of trophy hunting, and we're able to win. First thing won in Colorado since the 80s and when it came to wildlife. But we actually just launched our own C4, which allows us to be even more active and protect the C3 that's called Hunt to Conserve. So you're going to see that entity really jump in much bigger, be able to be heavier in the lobbying arm and work harder on these. I mean, I can tell you, when you see what's coming down the pipe right now in Oregon, Colorado, Washington, even New Mexico, some of these ballot initiatives that are coming, are they're attacked on hunting. I mean, they are anti-hunting bills that we're going to have to fight harder than we ever had to keep this around. And it goes back to what we're talking about initially. When you look at the U of M project and you look at the wild sustenance program that we've had there for many years, you know, that wild sustenance program the university has takes, you have to have never hunted to apply to be part of this accredited class. And it's their number one requested class. And it takes kids from the very beginning of hunter safety and firearm safety all the way to storing that meat in the freezer. And we've actually expanded that program to another university in New York now. That's what we have to do to fight this cultural shift, because the anti-hunting push is big. And, you know, hunting and the money that you mentioned that goes on the ground from license sales to all the local impact, that's what keeps our game alive and keeps them managed. That's how our state agencies manage them, is through all that funding, through the Pittman-Robertson funds. And the more we can tell that story and get it out there and get the truth, most people, even if they're what I would call neutral around hunting, they understand it.
Yeah. You just touched on another key narrative that we're seeing where folks really need to be able to read through the lines here. You'll have groups and organizations, oh, no, we support hunting. Oh, no, we allow hunting access on our land here in northeastern Montana. Oh, but we don't allow this kind of hunting or that kind of hunting. Oh, we don't allow predator hunts. That's what they do. The left always has this incremental approach where they eventually want to do away with all hunting, but they know they can't get away with it now, so they have to slowly heat up the water. And, well, we don't like this kind of hunting. We don't like that kind of hunting.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, the issue in Colorado was that with the mountain lion. We changed the wording around on the ballot, but when it was initially out, it would have been the stepping stone to attack on hunting. And look, we're pro all these animals. I mean, predators, the balance, the ecology. It's all about balance. Everything has to be managed. I think Blake's piece in the Washington Post, that's what it comes down to. All we're arguing is that they need to be managed, and the state wildlife agencies are the best people to manage in each state. It's a little different in each state. Let the experts do what they do, and let's trust the science, because the science is how they ended up in the Endangered Species Act in the first place. The science has got them recovered. Now let's continue to manage. It's that, you know, we're not trying to get rid of anything.
Yeah, I think I just saw some of these environmental groups, some that even pretend to be, you know, outdoor sportsmen groups. They all just authored some piece where they want the grizzly to remain on the endangered species list. And they're the same groups and people that would come out and would be opposed to more active forest management for fire prevention. And basically what these people are lobbying for is worse for wildlife habitat. But that's where, you know, reasonable voices like the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation come in about how, look, calling for common sense on the Endangered Species Act, calling for active forest management to better manage our federal lands. It all ties in together, right?
Absolutely. I mean, and it all comes back to the science tells us what we need to do. We just need to follow it. And with good science and good management, we can make some impact pretty quickly on this. I mean, the wildfire stuff we're seeing, you know, this is accumulation of 25 years of just not managing our forests. And, you know, the Fix Our Forest Act has a lot of fixes in there that just make it, you know, we need to open up and make this a lot easier to do. It takes so long right now to go through all the environmental stages and stuff, so forth, to make impact. And we're, you know, unfortunately, we're seeing the negatives of not doing that. And hopefully we can make some impact there. I mean, again, we're all around the science and data and following it and managing. Everything needs to be managed. We've got to manage our forests just like we manage our wildlife.
That's right. That's right. A couple of minutes to go here with Kyle Weaver, CEO of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, based in Missoula, Montana. I understand you guys just had your Elk Summit last week. I was at the Western Congressional Caucus meetings. What came up that you can share at the Elk Summit? And, you know, what about the topic of, you know, incentivizing landowners to allow access for hunting, for example?
Yeah, you know, it's as we work with all the state agencies, what comes down to is they're all battling the same things in different ways. It's not just unique to Montana. Some states have programs that are working really well. Some of those won't work in another state, but everyone's trying to tackle this and find ways to manage it. And it's a difficult situation. And again, we're for the resident and the non-resident. We're for programs both ways. And it's a tough situation. I can't say anyone has a perfect solution anywhere. I think every state is a little different, but the information they're sharing and programs that work. And when you look at it too, you know, a lot of people hunt across state lines. I mean, even though one's a resident here, I think it's around 58% of our members hunt outside their state. As you can imagine, it puts us in a tough spot sometimes. That's not our game to get and take positions on those things. We just want to support the state agencies the best we can and how they're trying to manage, especially elk. And what really gets talked about with elk, you know, you have a quota, you have a certain population, but what that really comes down to is there's a societal accepted population. As you said, the rancher said we have too many, and the public landowner says, man, I haven't seen an elk. We don't have any elk. And the answer is somewhere in the middle, you know.
Yeah,
It's a tough deal.
But again, that goes back to the habitat. If we better managed our so-called public lands, we'd have better elk opportunities on those same public lands. Kyle Weaver, CEO of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, great to have you on the show once again. I know we had you on from our coverage down at the SHOT Show in Vegas a few years ago. So great to have you on the program again. We'll have to do this again.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. Appreciate all your work you do. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much. Appreciate all you guys do. And hey, say hi to our friends like Ashley Strong and you know, Mark Baker and some of the other fine folks that are helping out with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation mission. Yeah, great to have you on the show. All right, quick break. I mentioned last week while they were having their Elk Summit, I was attending the Western Congressional Caucus Summit. Ran into Everett Headley with Safari Club International. He'll join us from the Bitterroot right after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
The National Corn Growers issued a report saying corn prices have dropped about 50% since hitting a peak in 2022. However, the cost of production has declined only modestly, making the production of corn unprofitable. The group said despite the plunging prices, the cost of growing an acre of corn this year is only down 3.3% from when prices topped out in 2022. Production of the grain is set to reach 16.742 billion bushels on a yield of 188.8 bushels per acre in the marketing year. The average cost to grow a bushel of corn this year is projected at approximately $4.75 a bushel, and USDA expects farmers to receive around $3.90 per bushel, resulting in an 85-cent per bushel loss. But cattle feeders are not complaining about cheap corn, especially as the price of cattle and beef continues to rise. Because despite record-high retail prices, U.S. beef demand remains strong. A new CoBank report says all fresh beef prices jumped 9% to $8.90 per pound, yet consumer interest has not weakened. Analysts credit improved beef quality and wider availability of premium cuts for sustaining demand. Compared to 30 years ago, the U.S. industry now produces much higher quality beef, and consumers have developed a strong preference for it. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. right. Well, what a great conversation there with Kyle Weaver, the CEO of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Mentioned how last week they had their elk summit that they were doing at RMEF. Meanwhile, I got a chance to attend this Western Congressional Caucus summit and sit in on a lot of the panel conversations. We had the head of the U.S. Forest Service, several members of Congress, other administration officials from the Department of Interior, the head of the Montana DNRC. She was in the House as well. So some great conversations that we were able to have off air and on air on the program. But it was also great running into Everett Headley. He's with SCI, the Western Montana SCI chapter, the chapter of Safari Club International. Everett, great to have you on the show and great seeing you in the Flathead last week.
Well, it was beautiful, wasn't it, Aaron? Great time on Whitefish Lake.
Oh, man, perfect weather. Yeah, talk about a rough gig, you know. I got to do this radio show from the Whitefish Lake Lodge, interview all these, you know, interesting folks, and then go change into my swim trunks and jump in the lake. You can't complain, can you?
You really can't. I mean, it's a great time for us to just hang out and have some informal conversations, and you and I were able to do that and talk with senators. I know Senator Sheehy was there, and Representative Zinke was as well. So it's always great to be able to get their ear, even if it's just a moment over some water surfing. I think I saw Representative Zinke doing that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Charlie don't surf, but those Navy SEALs know how to surf, don't they?
That's right.
Yeah, I think he even had a T-shirt on that said something like "Commies can't surf" or something like that. But yeah, he's still got it. That's for sure. If anybody's wondering if he's getting up there, and oh no, he's still got it. Well, I don't know if you were able to listen in on our conversation we had there with Kyle Weaver, the CEO of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. But you know, one of the things that we brought up was how you know these fake phony outdoor groups that pretend to be sportsmen, pretend to be outdoor groups, really what they are, you know, they're environmental groups. Some of them are actually anti-hunting groups, but they realize that they have to be a little bit quieter and more subversive with the way they carry out their tactics, right? So they pretend to be sportsmen groups. And so, but one of the things I think that stood out was where he talked about how, you know, They will pick certain types of game. Well, we support hunting, but we don't support that kind of hunting or this kind of hunting. And that's why I'm such a big fan of what you guys do with SCI, because you guys are all about pointing out how hunting is conservation. If you actually care about game and wildlife, and big game in particular, or even African game and wildlife, or maybe especially African game and wildlife, then you should support hunting of that, because it's very easy for people to say, well, we don't like that kind of hunting.
Yeah, you know, I think it's important when you look at conservation groups to see, you know, where the funding comes from and where the funding goes, and then who's actually involved. And, you know, at Safari Club International, we like to say we're first for hunters everywhere, every method, every species. So if Africa is your bag and you love going over there and doing that, that's great. But, you know, we're also involved in North America, Europe, at the national level, the local level. We've got staff of lawyers that are just really incredible. And in Montana, you know, we've had a lot of challenges, ESA, wolf and grizzly bear. We've got other things going on as well that we need advocacy, and we need people who are trained in that. And SCI brings that staff forward, and we are first in the battle just about every time.
Yeah, it was so fun a few years ago. Actually, I think when I first had Kyle Weaver join me on the show, and we had Mark Baker, actually Congressman Zinke was there for that show as well. But SCI, you guys were having your big international convention in Vegas. I was there for the SHOT Show in Vegas, so I was able to bounce around and go back and forth between both the SHOT Show and SCI. So, man, that was like, you know, just a double header. It was great getting a chance to catch up with folks at both conventions. I think now you guys have your big national or international convention in Nashville. That'd be fun to attend one of these days. But before I forget, 1 week from today, Western Montana SCI, you guys are having your annual banquet September 4th at the Hilton Garden Inn, I believe in Missoula, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we are been on a hiatus for about 5 or 6 years, and the chapter is coming back, and we have a brand new banquet. It's going to be really incredible. Tickets are really affordable, $200 for a couple for a gourmet dinner at night and fun, and with all the games and auctions that banquets have. And this year, man, we have some really incredible trips that are going to be available. If you want to go to Cabo, if you want to go to Tuscany, if you want to go to Nashville, which you mentioned, our SCI convention in February is it's tops for sure. It is just without peer for any other type of show. But if you are looking for some deals on hunting, man, there are some of those as well. Argentina, we've got black buck, we've got Patagonian ram. Of course, we've got the dove hunts that everybody loves to go to South America to see. We've got local stuff with Western Montana fishing adventures. We have other Western Montana hunting as well. So we're definitely trying to support our local guides and outfitters as well. There's just going to be an incredible night of fun. The tickets to the door also get you your membership to SEI, which includes, you know, our weekly newspaper, our monthly magazine, and just so much more that people just don't know how much you get when you become a member at SEI.
Yeah, one of these days I want to do one of those African hunts or something like that, or even that they've had Scottish hunting opportunities as well. How incredible does that sound? Yeah, I've emceed for several years the Montana chapter banquet that's usually every March in Billings. And when I'm emceeing, you know, the auctioneer will auction off all the auction items, but I will read the descriptions. And it's just like, man, every description for every auction item, I'm like, ooh, I wish I could do this one. But what I'm amazed is how good of a deal people get on some of these hunting opportunities or just travel packages that you mentioned. So if you've never done anything like this, this is the way to do it, because these, you know, the hunts are vetted, the programs are vetted, and then usually you get a pretty freaking good deal on this stuff as well. But, you know, I mentioned African hunts. That's one of the things where folks will say, well, I support hunting, but I don't like that kind of hunting. And what they don't realize, our friend Tom Opry, you know, this wildlife filmmaker who just did this film that he toured all across Montana with, The Real Yellowstone. A couple of things there. One, he highlights how farmers and ranchers provide better habitat for wildlife, which legitimate organizations like yours and the Rocky Mountain Elk get, right? Even though those same ranchers mm-hmm. would get attacked by these other green decoy groups. The other thing that Tom Opry has done is he has highlighted how, look, it is hunting that has saved these exotic wildlife animals in Africa, that hunting is what protects those species. If there was no economic incentive to protect that game, then there would be no game in town because they would just be poached to extinction.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You know, Tom's film, The Real Yellowstone, you've got Eric Albus, and you've got Don McDonald, and you've got others from Montana, and they are real Montanans dealing with this situation on their properties and utilizing a resource and managing it in a way that every year gets better and better. And so, you know, I think it's really worth people watching the film to see just what it's like to live on the land here in Montana, because it's not like TV. There's hard days and there's rough days, but then, you know, you get to wake up to a sunrise in Montana and you know, the hard just kind of washes away, right? So really, I can't recommend the film enough. People need to see it for sure. But, you know, when you talk about the concept, if it pays, it stays, that's universal, right? And it works in Africa. It works here in Montana. And the reality is we put a value on wildlife beyond what anybody else could do, whether it's a photo safari or just somebody who says, you know, I love the elk. The reality is that what we put into the conservation system as sportsmen just can't be compared. In Africa, I think the ratio is 19 safari dollars to one African. It's 19 to one for photo safaris to hunting safaris. So you got to have 20 times as many people, which means 20 times the impact on the ground, just to equal what one hunter can do. And so there's a reality that hunting is doing the best effort for the wildlife and the wild places on the ground, and it just it's without question.
Yeah, got a great phone-in message here from Jim in Great Falls. You know, we've been talking about wildlife and elk and habitat, et cetera. Jim in Great Falls just messaged us, or just called in a message for our producer here. He says, I'm stacking hay on Jim Peterson Ranch. Jim says, hi. And then he's also saying, hey, tell the DOT to get out here and put some put some elk crossing signs up for folks. So apparently Jim has seen a lot of elk out there. Jim, thanks for that message. Great to hear from you. You can message us on our Montana Talks app. If you've got a quick question or comment, want to jump in on the conversation, we're doing a reboot on our phone system here today. Otherwise, we'd be telling you the phone number and telling you to call in as well. All right, more to follow with Everett Headley from SCI Western Montana Chapter. And again, SCI Western Montana Chapter having their banquet 1 week from today in Missoula. All right, stand by. Back with Everett right after this. USS Montana, U.S. Navy submarine captain and crew are coming back to Montana. Full details and more for your chance to meet them. MontanaTalks.com.
Mike.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, great to have Everett Headley on the program with us here. Not only is he with Western Montana SCI, Western Montana Safari Club International Chapter, but he's also a board member for PLPW, which Everett, if I'm not mistaken, Public Lands, Public Wildlife, right? This kind of ties in with one of the topics we were covering earlier as well, which is there's groups out there that deliberately want to divide us for political reasons, for other big picture reasons, but especially when it comes to the American hunter and agriculture, you name it. There's groups out there that will call themselves outdoor groups, sportsman groups, and they come in and they simply want to attack farmers and ranchers, or they want to cause a divide between, you know, public lands hunters versus private lands hunters. And Everett, I remember it's been several years ago, but I remember there was a left-wing activist who was on that PLPW. And man, if there was a private landowner shutting down a road, you'd hear from that guy in a heartbeat. But if the federal government was shutting down an access road to get to your elk hunting habitat, you wouldn't hear a peep out of that guy.
Yeah, you know, the Private Land Public Wildlife Committee is a really unique opportunity because it brings sportsmen, landowners, and outfitters together to talk about issues that are actively on our plate from all these perspectives. And so we have a really great group. We've been meeting together I think this has been around since Governor Roscoe signed it some time ago. So it's been established and it works. And from there, we come out with resolutions that have all of these perspectives kind of melded together. And the conversations that we're able to have, they're honest, they're hard, but it helps us to better understand each other's perspective. And instead of us combating each other, it's really working together. And so the PLPW is an asset for everybody from all of those perspectives, but also the state and the department. We've worked on hunter behavior problems. So guys not knowing how to close gates or staying off muddy roads and working on education programs there. So we have the Hunter Landowner Stewardship Project that the department is currently reworking. That'll be out soon, I hope. We're looking at better ways to incentivize landowners for access, but also for having elk and deer and everything else on their property. So we've worked on 454s, the elk management agreements, and kind of refined those as well. And then kind of one of my pet projects is helping the department modernize a little bit more. So utilizing our app and how we do notifications, reporting, there's a whole host of things that we can do, but all of that comes out of PLPW, and it's a think tank made up of just average Montanans.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, keep us posted on your efforts there and the conversations there, especially if there's something we need to talk with folks, you know, share across the airwaves across Montana to get public input. Yeah, because I know a bunch of our listeners would love to weigh in on those topics. You know, just another thing I'd throw out there, you know, last week, not only did we run into you, ran into Tom Opry and Tom's wife, Olivia. She does some incredible work with the SCI as well. But, you know, one of the things, one of the programs she started, one of the points she made is that, you know, we talk about African wildlife. And, of course, you guys do safaris all over the world. We're not just talking about safaris in Africa. You're talking about hunting opportunities all over the world, including right here in Montana. But she made the point that, like, look, now that hunting is an economic opportunity for some of these remote African villagers, Americans do not understand the type of poverty they deal with in Africa, where look, if your village is so poor, is so hungry and facing starvation, like, now you make money off of people coming to hunt there. Well, now kids are not being sold. That's what happens in places like Africa. If they don't have any economic opportunity, their kids are sometimes sold into sex slavery, essentially, is what it ends up being. And so it's not just about hunting and game. It's a much bigger deal out there. So I just wanted to throw that point out there. Everett Headley, what else did you want to tell folks about Safari Club International and the Western Montana chapter in particular? We got about a minute and a half to go.
Yeah, I would say this. You know, the idea of safari, old Swahili word, really just means adventure. And for those of us who like to be in the mountains or in the field, we really like being part of that environment. And we are looking for that same adventure. So if you hear the word safari and you think, oh, it's just not for me, I'm never going to make it to Africa, I would tell you this. Safari Club is about you, whether you're hunting pheasants in eastern Montana or you're chasing elk, which opens, what, in about a week? So we're all excited about that, chasing some bugles. That's for you as well. And if you're making your trip to Alaska and chase some caribou or moose up there, Safari Club's for you there as well. So the idea is we're first for hunters. We're active everywhere on every angle and in every aspect that we can be. So don't think just because we have safari in the title, it's not for you. Come see us at the banquet, see how much fun we have, get plugged in, see what we're doing here in Montana, in the States, and all over the world. And I think you'll see that there's some kindred spirits for you there.
What's the easiest way for people to get tickets for the Missoula banquet coming up?
Yeah, I would tell you, go to the website. It's WMTSCI.org, WMTSCI.org.
Perfect. All right, Everett Headley, great to have you on the program. Thanks for what you do. Thanks for what our friends with SCI do. And great to have you on the show. Coming up on Friday's Montana Talks, we should have some open phones time. Plus, we're going to be joined once again by Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter. He's got probably one of the most comprehensive school safety, school security programs in the country, and he's doing it right here in Montana. So we're gonna talk school safety with Sheriff Slaughter and much more on Friday's show. Wow.